Hi, everyone, and welcome to Book Hype, episode number 125. Today, we are going to be doing our author spotlight on C.S. Lewis. My name is Karen, and I am joined by Brittany and Kristen. Hello, ladies.
Hello. Hello.
How you guys doing today?
Oh, fantastic. Karen knows. Karen knows. We've been talking all day.
We have been talking all day.
Doing great. Good. Pumped for book hype.
Yeah. If I could stop coughing, it would be great. All of a sudden, you say, let's start, and I have to cough, and now I, like, can't stop. So I keep muting it, and I'm like, okay, just don't forget to mute it before you cough, or you'll blow out everybody's eardrums.
That's okay. I just finished a stuffed pepper, and I, like, doused it in hot sauce, and now I'm all phlegmy. Like, my body is trying to counteract all the spice in my throat. So if I sound kind of funny, that's why.
Oh boy. What a great gang we are.
Hey, and people still listen to us, so we're doing something right. Mm-hmm. Let's jump into what we've been reading. And Kristen, as always, you've blown us all out of the water, so why don't you go first?
I mean, as I said, it's a hazard of life at my job. Actually, two of them are rereads for me. I don't think I've ever talked about them on the podcast before, though. I reread Officer Off Limits and Asking for Trouble by Tessa Bailey, who I love. She is kind of known in the romance circle as, like, the queen of dirty talk. but these two are actually, they're just really solid, good stories. Officer Off Limits is about this girl who has always, she's lived in California basically her whole life. Her father, it works as a hostage negotiator in New York City. He has a heart attack. She goes to visit him, and the night before she goes, her fiance, like, breaks off their engagement, and she meets this young guy who's basically her father's protege while she's, like, in New York, and the two of them just kind of hit it off. And in addition to that, there's some other things going on in the story that are just interesting. And then Asking for Trouble is kind of the sequel to that. Like, it's still in the same universe, but it's about the girl from Officer Off Limits, her name is Story, her best friend Hayden, and the guy that's involved in that book is, like, hysterical, and they're always at odds, they're fighting, it's an enemies to lovers kind of story, and it's hilarious. So they're a good fun read. I really love Tessa's books, and it's been a while since I've talked about her. And then I finally got a chance to start To Love and to Cherish, which is the third book in Lauren Lane's Wedding Bell series, and it's kind of the book we've been waiting for. I mean, I know we just started waiting for these in June when she released the first one, but she's been building these two up the entire series, and we've seen them kind of existing in the world for a while, and so I'm really glad to finally get into it. I haven't finished it yet, because I'm trying to pace myself, because I really, really love this world and these books, but it's really good. So if you haven't checked out The Wedding Bells, they're really good fun. And last but never least, I finally finished the third book in the Perfect Gentleman series, which is not the final book, but it's called Big Easy Temptation. It's by Shayla Black and Lexi Blake. I've been talking about these books for probably a couple weeks now. And it just, again, kind of knocked my socks off. I'm loving the overall mystery that exists in this series. Like, it's really intense, and I can't see where it's going next, and I'm really excited, but now I have to wait, I think, until maybe, like, next May to get the next book, which is kind of going to kill me. But this one, they did something a little different with this story, where they actually went back in time about 3 or 4 years and told a major chunk of this couple's history, of something that happened 3 years before the present, and then came back and let you see what all the, like, what the product of all of that was, and then continued on with the modern day story. And while we were back in the flashback, it was a good solid, like, 10 chapters, 12 chapters of flashback. And I kept thinking, wow, like, they're really going for it. And I didn't think I was going to be a huge fan of that structure. like spending that much time not focused on the central premise, but it actually worked really well. And I was really in, like, I was really compelled and really into the story by the time it got to the end. So yeah, I'm just, it's been a good reading week for me.
That sounds very different with the flashback like that, but if done correctly, I could see how that could have like a really big impact on the story.
Yeah, it was really surprising because it's not how they've told these things before. If they've done flashbacks in the first couple, it was really brief, maybe a chapter. But, you know, it was such a big part of the story of these two people that they knew they had to kind of go back to tell it. And the way they did it worked out really, really well.
Very cool. Brittany, what have you been reading?
I have just been reading our book for next week, which is Dead House by Dawn Kurtjic. Every week, this is going to be such a hard book to get through next week, trying to say her name, by our dear friend Dawn. And
Dawn K.
Dawn K. And it's really interesting. I was telling Karen.
I'm sorry, it sounds like you're saying donkey, but like donkey.
Donkey. yeah, it's really interesting. And I might actually like a book we read on Book Hype for the first time in 2016. So that's exciting for everyone.
I'm so pumped.
And yeah, I'm just going to, my goal this week is to really pick it up when I'm not, it's not at the end of my day, because I've been, it's been on my nightstand, so I've been picking it up before I go to bed, and I've been really tired, and so I only get through a little bit at a time, and I'd really like to give it, like, you know, a full hour here or a full hour there, so to really just get involved in the story, and I could see how it would really keep my attention with all the different styles of things that are going on and jumping from clues and different types of materials throughout the book, so it'll be a really interesting read, and I hope you guys like it, too. I hope I still like it by the time we come back next week. No promises, though.
Yeah, I'm really excited to discuss that one, just because, like, her books are very different. And also, I'm really hoping that if you guys like it, you'll pick up her second book, which is the one that I've been talking about. And then I have more people to talk to that about with. So that'll be really cool. The only book that I managed to read this week was Atlantis Lost by T.A. Barron, and it's been a little while, so you guys might not remember, but T.A. Barron is one of my favorite authors of all time. He wrote the Lost Years of Merlin series, and this is his new trilogy. This one just came out this month. It is the last book in the Atlantis series. It started with Atlantis Rising, I think, and then Atlantis in Peril, and now Atlantis Lost, and it tells the story of Atlantis, the island, and how it, you know, succumbed to the sea, and all of that. And it's, the Merlin books I hold in such high esteem that I think I'm one of those unfortunate people where, like, nothing else will ever match up to that, and that has nothing to say against the story, but because those are one of my favorite, that is one of my favorite series of all time, like right up there with Harry Potter, it's hard for me to like accept anything else into my life, which is horrible. Like, I should try, but I can't. That being said, like, it was a good story, and it was really interesting to see his take on the Atlantis story, and he has a lot of themes that are always prevalent in his books, a lot of it having to do with humans screwing up nature and how we should just let things be and how we should appreciate what we have. And that was a huge theme in this series as well. So it's kind of nice to see the same things woven throughout and the lessons that he tries to convey with his story. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, this last one was tragic, for obvious reasons, because you do know that Atlantis is lost, but I think it also holds a lot of those lessons that I really appreciated reading about when I was younger, when I read Merlin as well. For Book Bites this week, Brittany's actually going to take this one away.
Yeah, so last night, and Karen's already heard this, but last night I went to go see Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them at a special charity screening, and it was great. That's all I'm going to say about it. But it got me thinking about how J.K. Rowling is releasing the screenplay similar to how she released the script for The Cursed Child. And I was having a discussion with some other people who also saw the film last night, and we were kind of wondering, like, you know, J.K. Rowling made a comment. She gave a talk before the screening, and she made a comment about how she learned to write the screenplay on the go. So she was, like, you know, very detail heavy, and she spent, like, you know, pages and pages and pages describing certain things, and that had to really be cut down into screenplay format. So I was hoping, and I mean, I don't know what the book is going to be when it comes out, but maybe some of those details got put back in, or if this is actually like the production script that we're going to get. And whether or not people enjoy reading screenplays versus a novel, and can they really ever take the place of the novel? Because I really think that the world or worlds that J.K. Rowling creates would work so well in novel form that I'm just a little nervous about reading Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. I'm going to, mainly because there are certain scenes that were cut from the film, as David Yates has mentioned in a couple of interviews, that will definitely be in the screenplay, so I'd like to read them, even if we can't visually see them until the DVDs come out. But also, this made me think about how much I enjoyed Hold Me Closer, the Tiny Cooper story, which I'm very excited that I get to bring up again. And I unintentionally picked this without that in mind, and then I was like, yes, I can talk about Tiny Cooper again on Book Hype, I'm bringing him back. So I just wanted to get a sense of what you guys thought about reading screenplays, if you're planning on picking up the screenplay to read, or just your thoughts. Because Kristen, I'm assuming, put in this Aaron Sorkin comment, and I have all the scripts that are available from Aaron Sorkin downloaded on my computer, but I've never read them.
Yeah, I love... actually reading screenplays. Like, there's something about the format that for me, I can like visualize it really easily. Like, I love novel reading, clearly, but it's just a different kind of reading. It's a different way to build a world and to look at it. So I actually took a screenwriting class in college, and I think maybe that helps a little bit, is like we kind of got into how it's structured and how you build a script. So because of that, I think I appreciate it a little more. But I have read before Aaron Sorkin's like script. I think I read the one for The American President, aka my favorite movie in the history of the world. And like, there's just something about the way he writes and just how much of a cadence and how powerful his prose is that I love reading his screenplays. I don't think I've ever gotten into any of the West Wing ones. Like, I've seen them and I've used them when I was looking for quotes or certain scenes or something. But I've never like full out read them. But I'm definitely a fan of reading screenplays and would love to get my hands on the Fantastic Beasts one when it comes out. I don't know if I've ever read one that was like strictly a screenplay that was never like put out or never released in video form or anything like that. I wonder if I'd have the same like affinity for them if it was something that I didn't have a visual already for.
Yeah, and I think that's really my, like, because part of my old job was I read scripts, like, all day, 8 hours a day. And, like, obviously these are new writers and the worlds don't exist. But for a couple of them, like, I had, like, you know, story Bibles, which built the world around it. So, like, you know, you read a ton of research and material, and then you read the screenplay, and then it's like, oh, okay, I see where everything fits in. And I think Sorkin is a great example of just it, like, it doesn't matter if you can picture where they're walking in the West Wing because you're caught up in the conversation. Like, the background of where things happen in the West Wing, and even The American President or A Few Good Men, like, they could just say a courtroom and you're like, all right, I got that in my head. Like, it's not such a big fantasy world. And that's why I think the Fantastic Beasts script is so interesting, because you need the basis of that movie to paint the picture in your head, because it's like with Harry Potter, she has the room to give you like 30 pages of exposition of what the castle halls look like. But here she can't. So that's what really is going to be interesting about Fantastic Beasts, because everything's in her head and she knows what she wants to put down, but just the formatting of a screenplay won't allow her to do that.
Reading screenplays is very new to me. I think the only one that I've ever read, like, start to finish was Cursed Child, and that was a very different experience. I think going back to your original question, like, can they ever take the place of a novel? No, of course I don't think that, but the success of releasing them and making it so that fans can buy them, I think, is something fairly new, at least at this level, at the Harry Potter level, where like everybody is going to want to get their hands on them. And I think that that might become a new thing. If people are really into a movie, they might want to buy the screenplay to have it. And I think that's an interesting concept. I don't see anything against that. It's hard for me to really get behind it, though, because the lack of detail. But in terms of Fantastic Beasts, I saw where she said that hers are much more detailed than a regular screenplay, and that makes me much more excited. And also, the other reason why I would like to read a screenplay is that they put down in words the emotion that is supposed to go behind the characterization of something. Whereas if you don't interpret it that way in the movie, it's there on the paper telling you, okay, they were supposed to be like super sad during this scene, even though they only looked a little bummed out or something. So I think like getting clarification, I guess is what I'm saying, behind some of the emotions and the meanings of what's being said and done is really intriguing for me.
Yeah.
But that is an excellent question, actually, and I'd be really interested to hear what our listeners have to say about it as well. And you can do that by tweeting us at BookHype. Little self-promotion there. Okay, let's jump into our main discussion for this week, which is, like I said at the top of the episode, our author spotlight. And this time it's going to be on C.S. Lewis. And I don't know about you guys, but I never knew what C.S. stood for. And C.S. Lewis. Did you guys?
I still don't know because I didn't read the show notes. Surprise me, Karen.
I feel like I should have, but I don't think I did.
Well,
let's just put it that way.
His full name is Clive Staples Lewis, which is a very interesting name and perhaps some would say unfortunate.
I hope you went Others by, like, may Staples not. As a child. Like, hey, Staples. That'd be great.
Kids are mean, yeah.
They are. Oh, man. But I can see why he abbreviated, just throwing that out there. But the reason why we chose him for our November author spotlight is because he was born November 29th, 1898, actually. And unfortunately, he died November 22nd, 1963, about a week before his 65th birthday. And I would have been pissed. I mean, I would have been dead, but I would have been pissed because, like, how does that happen? Like, at least let me live until I turn 65.
You're great.
Come on, one more week. One more week.
So, yeah, obviously because he was born in this month and we really wanted to do a spotlight on him. And, of course, his legacy as an author, especially in terms of the Chronicles of Narnia, is pretty big. And it's something that we're all pretty familiar with. So that's why we wanted to dive into this. But I still learned a lot about him doing research for this episode that I had never known before. And I always like to read through what authors have done in their lifetime, what they're known for other than being an author, because I found, surprisingly, and I don't know why this is a surprise to me, that they've often done like a million other things. They're not always just an author. They've done, you know, they could be professors and all these other things. C.S. Lewis was a British novelist, poet, academic, medievalist, literary critic, essayist, broadcaster, and lecturer. So very much in the literary community, but doing some other things that I think are a little bit different too.
I want to know what you have to do to be known as a medievalist, because that is an awesome word.
And study the Middle Ages, basically.
I mean, that's just a, it's a cool term to have as a descriptor, like for your work and for things that you did in your life. Like, he's a medievalist. That's kind of awesome.
My first ever professor of my first ever class in college was I took like an upper level medieval literature class, and he is a medievalist, and Professor Ugolnik, and he was this like big Russian like priest biker. He would ride his motorcycle to campus, awesome. And he had like, he was just like this big guy, but he's also like a priest and he's a medievalist and he could speak perfect old English. He was the coolest person ever. He was so cool. And I was like, yes. I went into school as a government major. I took his class for a week and I changed my major to English.
Oh my gosh. And that's what you graduated with,
right?
And
that's what I graduated with, yeah. I told him that at like our English seminar dinner. I was like, your class, after 1 week, I knew that I was changing my major to English. He was so cool.
How did he respond?
Well, he gave me like a big bear hug, and because he was drunk, because it was the English department dinner. And
this guy.
It was amazing. And he like hitched a ride with like our cute little like 80-year-old English department secretary home, because she's like, Anthony, you can't drive.
I'm like so suddenly jealous of you right now. That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Professor Ugolnik, a great man.
Wow. Anyway, that got a little derailed, but that's fine. I don't mind at all, because that was an awesome story.
Fun stories about medievalists. I got them.
Yes. But going back to C.S. Lewis, he was also a lay theologian, which means that he didn't have a formal education in the field of religion, but he was sort of, he liked to teach people and he liked to obviously write about it. But he was also a Christian apologist, which means that he defends basically any and all actions, even the bad ones, against people who object to what Christians have done throughout the course of history. And I think that this is, for some people, a blight on his name, because it's not always a great thing being an apologist, but he was obviously very interested in the Christian religion, and his faith had a huge influence on his work, especially the Chronicles of Narnia. And that's actually something I learned later, after reading the Chronicles of Narnia for the first time. Did you guys know that going into it, or is that something that you also learned later on?
I actually read The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe in the fourth grade as a class, like my entire class read it. And I went to a parochial school, a little Lutheran school in Ohio. So I knew about his Christian leanings just because, and his faith, because it was a big part of my upbringing and my schooling and all that too. So we definitely talked a bit about his faith and what it meant to him and how it influenced his writing and all of that too. So I definitely knew this about him before reading the book, and we, you know, as a class, like went into the symbolism and things that are definitely prevalent, even if he kind of doesn't necessarily acknowledge all of it all the time.
I was on mute. We read it also as a class in the third grade. I just remember because I remember my teacher bringing in Turkish Delight, and it was disgusting. And
me too.
Oh, how gross is it?
It was the
bad. Such bad memories. Like, I don't think I've like really eaten anything with jelly since then, to be completely honest.
It's just not worth it.
Wow.
But we read it, and I went to Catholic school, and I don't remember talking about that at all. It was definitely something that was brought up in high school, but not in my little Catholic classroom in third grade. So my first reading of it was not so much focused on the symbolism, and we were just really focused, unless I was just really focused on getting to the part where we got free snacks and I ignored the rest, which is
very possible. And I was punished religiously by God for that because Turkish Delight was disgusting.
Third grade is tough.
Yeah, third grade was so tough. Yeah, but I really didn't know until high school when we did a little section on him in one of my classes.
Cool. That's interesting. It's something that I think I actually read them when I was older. I think we had something, it was probably in third grade, to be honest, where somebody came in and I believe they read it to us in the auditorium, like they were up on stage. I just remember being familiar with the words, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, although I didn't necessarily remember the story at all. And then read the books later on and saw that it had some religious connotations, but not necessarily like understanding how deeply it went or like how deep you could read into it. So finding that out later, and like we'll talk about some stuff in a little bit when we do talk about the Chronicles of Narnia, finding all of that out is pretty interesting in retrospect, I think. But something else I didn't know was he was good friends with J.R.R. Tolkien, and I think, like, I had heard this kind of around, but didn't realize, like, they were pretty good friends. And I think looking at their stories comparatively, you can see similar themes in their works, and they kind of tackled similar, like, arcs and stuff like that. But I think it's really cool that two of the most famous authors were friends. I always find that interesting.
Yeah, and it makes a lot of sense when, like, you hear, like, when we were reading up on Ursula Le Guin, she said that she was inspired by both of them, and they're contemporaries of each other, so that whole world building in that time is, you know, if you read one, you could definitely get through reading the other. Although, Tolkien went way too far with the Silmarillion, that man was a little bit crazier than C.S. Lewis, I think. But yeah, you can definitely see some of the similarities in their work.
Okay, so let's start talking about the big ones then, which is the Chronicles of Narnia. It's what he's best known for. And off the top, like, well, okay, actually I should ask this first. Which of the seven books in the Chronicles of Narnia have you guys read?
I've read all of them.
Okay, so have I. Kristen?
I think I'm the only slacker. I know I've read the first three, I think. I know I've read Lion, Witch, Wardrobe. I know I've read Prince Caspian. I'm trying to remember if I've read the third one or not. Or is that the third one? See, I'm so bad at this.
Well, no, actually, that's the reason why I brought it up, because there is a difference in the reading order depending on, like, which style you follow. And it's the original publication order puts the books as The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, Prince Caspian, The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, The Silver Chair, The Horse and His Boy, The Magician's Nephew, and The Last Battle. Whereas if you read it in chronological order in terms of the actual story, The Magician's Nephew comes first, followed by The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, then The Horse and His Boy, and then you get Prince Caspian, Voyage, Silver Chair, and Last Battle. So it honestly depends on which way you were reading it, whether you've read the third book or not.
So I've definitely read Prince Caspian and Voyage of the Dawn Treader. I think that's where I stopped, was after Voyage of the Dawn Treader, because I liked the Pevensies, and when there weren't any more, it kind of annoyed me. So that's I definitely need to finish them. Like, it's always kind of one of those looming shortcomings of mine that I haven't finished the Chronicles of Narnia, but definitely enjoy them.
Brittany, do you remember in which order you read them?
Yeah, I actually had to, like, look up the order. I read them in the original publication order because I think that's the collection that my school had. So I looked at, like, a bunch of, like, box sets, too, to be, like, because I just remember the white covers that they had. And, yeah, it was definitely the original publication order because The Silver Chair was number four, and number four, like, just sticks out in my head because that was my favorite one.
Gotcha. I read them in the chronological order according to what happens within the story. So I read The Magician's Nephew first, and then continued on through. And I remember being really confused at first, like, why isn't The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe first? Like, I thought that was totally the first book in the series. And it took me a little while to understand, like, what had actually happened. But there are some people who feel very, very strongly about reading them in the original publication order, and others who feel very strongly about reading them in the order of the story. I don't know that I necessarily feel very strongly one way or the other, but I will say, just in terms of like the way that my brain works, I'm glad that I read it in the chronological order versus the publication order, just because the events in my mind can stay in order a little bit better.
Yeah, I liked the way that I read them, and I honestly didn't know that there was another order, because I read these in school, just like, you know, every week I'd take a new one from the school library, and so that whatever collection we had, I just read them in that order, and I haven't actually picked them up since. So it would be interesting to read, if I do ever reread them, to read them in a different order and just see if it changes anything that I remember, or, you know, just all different sorts of things.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'd be up for doing that as well, too. I mean, 7 books is a lot of books, and I can barely finish one in a week these days, but maybe down the line it'll be interesting. I would like to reread them because it's been a little while, but yeah, I think that's pretty cool. And Britt, you said that your favorite book is The Silver Chair?
Yeah, and I really think that that's why I love the second Magician's book so much, is because it is, I was brushing up on The Silver Chair just to make sure that I wasn't misremembering why I liked it so much. And it's about like 2 kids who go back because they go to Narnia and they have to help the, what's his name? King Caspian he's like really old, and they need to find his son who went missing. And so these 2 kids like go to Narnia, and Aslan's like, you know, does his little like, I'll breathe on you and you can go to Narnia bit. And they go on like this voyage in order to try and find the missing son and heir to the throne. And in The Magicians, the second book is all about them being on like these great sea voyages and quests, and they're finding lost worlds, and they're doing all sorts of, and it was just so, it really reminded me of this book. And oh my gosh, why is his name not coming? Lev Grossman, that's his name, does say that he is very heavily inspired by C.S. Lewis and the Harry Potter novels, and it's sort of a, you can really see the mashup of this in there. And I think that's why this one just really stayed with me, because I was also reading these books at the same time as the, I think we've talked about this before too, all of the like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and the Jules Verne books. Like, I read all of these in the same year. I guess I was just like on a kick on that shelf of the library, like that section. And I just read anything that came in a series or like a grouping of the same author. And yeah, it's so like this like grand adventure to different worlds, and trying to like, you know, they have 4 tasks that they have to achieve, or like they're the 4 signs, and one of the final one is like this mystery. It's like whatever they ask that has to be done for Aslan, you have to do, and they don't know what it is. And there's like all sorts of cool magical elements to it. So yeah, I this one really stuck with me more so than even The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, because that was sort of like pegged as a, oh, we read that in class, but I'm going to be cool and go above and beyond and read the series and come back and say, yeah, that book's fine, but The Silver Chair is so much better, which was the type of child that I was.
I mean, I feel like all of us could relate to that, though. That sentiment. Kristen, do you have a favorite one?
For me, it's probably The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. It's just such a crazy world to step into, like to see where they are in the real world, and this wardrobe just takes them away and creates a whole new, you know, reality for them. And it's just, there's something about that book that is very precious and special. And I don't know, even if reading the rest of them, because I still haven't, I don't know if it could change that. It's grown up being a book that I really, really enjoy. and kind of hold dear. So I don't know if it could be one-upped by his other later books.
I really like The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe as well. I think that story is so magical, and it really introduces you into this world. And there's a lot to be said about that. I mean, I think that's why a lot of people tend to like the first books in a series, is because it captures your mind for the first time and you have such a reaction to it that it's hard for sequels to really live up to that sometimes. That being said, my favorite book is actually Voyage of the Dawn Treader. I like it for a lot of different reasons. I really like Edmund, and I like how much he's changed by this book. I also really enjoy Eustace because of how much he changes over the course of this book. And even like I even kind of like it because of the tragic ending and the way that, you know, you find out that Edmund and Lucy won't be coming back to Narnia anymore. Reepicheep is one of my favorite characters as well. He's so sassy. And the way that he kind of, like, they're in the Sea of Lilies and how he kind of goes off and all of that. It's just, that book really sticks out in my mind. And when you're reading a seven book series, like if another one really sticks out in your mind, you kind of just continue to gravitate toward it. And I just think for that, it made such an impact on me that I have to name it as one of my favorites, because the other ones kind of disappear into my memory a little bit for one reason or another. And I can remember bits and pieces, but that book I remember quite a bit about. So I think that'll always be very special to me. But I do want to know, too, if you guys have a favorite Pevensey. Like I said, mine's probably Edmund. I love Lucy, but I love the transformation that Edmund goes through and how he becomes such a good person afterward. It's really fulfilling for me.
I'll be the predictable one. Lucy is definitely my favorite Pevensey. It might just stem from Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe being my favorite and spending so much time with her in that book and kind of meeting Mr. Tumnus with her and exploring Narnia for the first time with her and through her eyes. I think I just kind of bonded with her. Not to mention that I'm a middle child, but for, you know, the first 4 years of my life, I was the youngest. Like, my sister was older than me, and I kind of, like, have always felt like the little misunderstood one sometimes in my family. So I think I just kind of gravitated toward Lucy because of that. Like, she doesn't necessarily feel like they get her. And when she steps into this new place and has all of the attention and everything is about her, and you know, and like everyone wants is getting to know her and meeting Mr. Tumnus and all of that. Like, I think that just has me bonded with Lucy.
Yeah, like, this is great for us because I liked Susan. Also because of kind of the same thing that Kristen was hitting on. I was the older sister who was kind of like, whatever, you believe in that, that's stupid. And then, like, you know, you see your brother playing with Legos and you're like, okay, but I also want to make a wild western town and have fun and rule the world. So I really just liked Susan and her coming around to believe in all of Narnia and just, you know, taking a really active role and, you know, being a badass with some bow and arrows. She's cool like that.
That, your description, your reason for liking her doesn't surprise me. That makes a lot of sense, but it surprises me that you like Susan. I think because I always found her kind of annoying, not at first, but definitely later on, and some of the ways in which she's like bossy and whiny and stuff, like, always really bothered me. So I was actually gonna be like, yeah, okay, well, but like, do any of us like Susan? This, and then you're like, my favorite character is Susan. Then I felt really crappy. Like,
this could have something to do with the fact that I have never seen the movies and I haven't read these since I was like 11 or 12. So I could just be looking at it from, like, a romantic standpoint, and if I actually read it, I'd be like, this bitch. So, you know.
I would be really interested to see if that changes that.
Yeah, because, you know, it definitely could, now that you said that, And that makes a lot of sense because I am coming at this with a very, like, heightened sense of what I remember from reading as a child, and I haven't seen it adapted at all. I've never seen any of the movies. So, yeah, I'd be interested to see if that opinion changes because based on everything else that I watch now, she would probably fall in line with the people that I hate.
Yeah, that would be really interesting to find out. So you have to tell me if you do reread them, if you still like Susan.
Oh, I will.
I don't want to give the ending away because Kristen hasn't read it, and I'm sure other people, if they plan on picking up the series having not read it before, I don't want to ruin anything. But just as a general statement, like, did you like The Last Battle, the final book in the series?
You know, I liked the mythology around it, which I thought was interesting because, once again, it, like, you know, I was brushing up on everything because, like, these books, besides the two that I really liked, which are The Silver Chair and The Lion, the Witch, and The Wardrobe, they kind of meld together in my mind. So I wanted to make sure I was coming at this from a point where I, like, knew what we were talking about with the final book. And yeah, it is, I like the mythology around it because, again, it does kind of link to what I love about The Magicians, where you can enjoy a peaceful time. And, I mean, the book's called The Last Battle, so obviously everyone knows that there's a battle coming. But you can be enjoying this, like, peaceful time, but there's something shifting and, you know, it's not going to last forever. And there's, like, there are things that people are paying attention to that are, like, the faceless man keeps coming in The Magicians. And, like, you know, people are, like, you know, carrying on with their lives because they're at a time of peace. But really, these worlds are being, like, threatened and stuff all over the place. So it does strike me as a good finale to the series. But I did reread the ending, and I was like, oh, well, I should reread this and see if I really even like this.
Yeah, when I first read it, I was really upset about it, and I think I was also confused. I didn't really understand what it all meant, and like I said, I kind of came to that understanding afterward. So I think I would also like to reread it and see how I feel about it now that I'm not only, you know, more mature and understand a bit about, like, what it all meant, but I'm also more well-read, and I think I can come at it with a different perspective, and whether that would make it better or worse in my mind, I honestly don't know, but just the series as a whole, like, C.S. Lewis has denied that it is a Christian allegory, despite the fact that Aslan has always been seen as Jesus or God or, you know, like the Holy Spirit kind of thing. But on the flip side of that, a lot of people also saw it as too pagan. And I think that's really interesting that it can be so divisive. And yet he really did incorporate a lot of Christian elements into the series. And that plays in a big part in the end as well. So I don't know. Maybe I'll get Kristen to read it and let me know what she thinks as well.
I've never actually read the criticism that it's too pagan, but that does not surprise me in the slightest because of some of the more magical elements. And I think some people get really put off by that in fantasy if they can't, like, you know, justify it themselves. And so that it doesn't surprise me that that's a criticism of the book, despite the very clear symbolism that is Aslan. And I haven't read the last book, so yeah, I will actually take that challenge. And I know Karen does not believe me because I do not always follow through on my accepted challenges. Ever but possible. I will take this one and we'll read the final three books and let you know what I think.
Maybe Karen will read Pride and Prejudice in that time. Who knows? The world may turn upside down.
Maybe you guys will finish, you know, Percy Jackson, Magnus Chase. Maybe Kristen will read 1984. We'll just have to see what happens.
We'll see. Listen. We'll see what happens.
Listen. We're all so bitter and yet so kind about it. Speaking of the movies, though, they did adapt The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, Prince Caspian, and Voyage of the Dawn Treader. Brittany, you said you've never seen any of them, but Kristen, you have, right?
Yes, I've seen all three of them.
Do you have a favorite one?
Oh, it's been a little while. I remember really enjoying Prince Caspian, and it was not my favorite book, but I remember just for some reason watching that book come alive for me was actually really like intense. Like I really enjoyed that one. I also credit The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe with introducing me to the delights that is James McAvoy, and I will be forever grateful because that man is amazing and is an amazing actor, and I have seen so many movies that I probably would never have seen without him. And so yeah, I don't know if Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is my favorite. I think Prince Caspian takes that seat, but it does have a special place in my heart.
I really like The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, despite the fact that Voyage of the Dawn Treader is my favorite book. I mean, I like terrible things, and I know some people don't particularly enjoy these movies as adaptations of those books because the books mean so much to them. I think the movies are good. I think they did a pretty good job bringing it to life. I think the first one really is the best one, although I did also really enjoy Prince Caspian, and I enjoyed Voyage too, but maybe it was just by that time, like, a lot of things had started coming out in terms of, like, the movies weren't really doing that well, and people weren't huge fans of them, and the excitement surrounding it had died down a lot, so that might be part of it as well. But Brittany, was there any particular reason why you hadn't watched them, or was it just one of those things that you never got around to?
Yeah, it was just one of those things that, like I said, I was really attached to the series when I was younger. And so by the time that these movies were coming out, they weren't at a time where I was going to see movies like that. I felt like they were really young for me, which is like odd because I'll go see a cartoon the day it comes out. But for some reason, I'm like, oh, no, Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, that's too young for me. And I do love James McAvoy, and I've seen tons of photos of him in these movies, but yeah, no, there was no real like protest or anything. It was just odd timing, I guess.
That makes sense. Yeah, but they're going to be adapting The Silver Chair, so you pumped for that?
The Silver Chair does take place. It will be a new set of kids, and it'll take place so far like past where the series left off, that, and I think it's just such a great action adventure story. I mean, not to say that the other ones aren't, but it just holds a special place in my heart, and there's so many cool tasks and challenges, and I just hope that they keep it to one movie, so it's like a really fast paced good movie, as opposed to like The Silver Chair Part 1, Aslan's first task, God. The Silver Chair Part 2, Aslan takes a nap, The Silver Chair Part 3, like, you know, just like it's stuff like that. I really hope that they don't do that and they do keep it to one movie. That's my only fear about rebooting a franchise, is because that word franchise, and this book sort of exists in a time where it's easy to time hop from here within the series. And so like, this is like, you know, this is a flash forward, and it's also, you know, you can go forwards or backwards. So I want them to either keep time hopping, but not drag this out for the sake of dragging this out.
Yeah, this is going to be really interesting. And I have a lot of questions surrounding the idea that this is rebooting the franchise, because on the one hand, it's really smart that they're adapting this book because the Pevensies don't show up in it. But so it can exist very much separate from the previous movies and maybe allow them to see if people are still interested in going to see these books adapted. But at the same time, is this going to allow them to actually reboot and remake the previous movies? I'm not saying I'm opposed to that, because I was always a little disappointed that they didn't follow through with the entire story. But at the same time, how can you finish that now? You know, like, it's been too long. So if they were to do the whole series, they would have to remake the previous ones. And I don't know. It's complicated. But C.S. Lewis's stepson is involved in the project, and the people who are involved, we can link to the article in the show notes that I wrote up a couple of months ago. They're very excited for this project and very dedicated to doing it correctly. And so I'm willing to give this movie a try. I definitely am not worried that this is going to like change anything because it's been so long since the previous movies anyway. But I'd be interested to see, you know, what happens with it and then what happens afterward if they end up moving forward with wanting to do any remakes.
Yeah, I like you said, this can exist without them remaking it because the only thing that they would have to do really is carry over Aslan. Like, just they can boost up his CGI because it's been a couple years. But other than that, they don't really – it's so far removed from their other adventures that, you know, because King Caspian is really old, so you don't need to, like, recast there. And to go backwards, I think, would be odd. And it's not that long since those other movies were made. Like, it is, but it's not going to be terribly long for them to remake them. So hopefully they'll let them stand as they are, and maybe it'll encourage people to go back and, you know, buy them on demand, or like they can, you know, make them available streaming, you know, stuff like that, which would be really great for the whole franchise as a whole. And then they can, you know, of course, re-release book covers, which I hate that they do, but you know, they can really tie it in to making those other movies profitable for them without having to remake them, which I hope that they do.
True. If we can wait 20 years between Independence Day and Independence Day 2, then I suppose.
That's right. Seriously.
True. Also, like, these Fantastic Beasts movies, I was talking about this with a bunch of people last night. It's like, I'm going to be, like, 35 going into the final movie. Being like, all right, I was here for the first one when I was 12, and now here I am. It's like, there was actually a cartoon of a bunch of, like, little kids, and they're running in with their mom, and like they have all like wands and Harry Potter glasses on. It says like Harry Potter and, you know, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone on like the movie marquee, and then it's a bunch of all the cartoon children as adults running in with their wands and their Harry Potter glasses, and it's like Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
I mean, imagine how the people feel who originally saw Star Wars in theaters.
I know.
Like, yeah. It's pretty cool, though. So, okay, moving on from Chronicles of Narnia now and starting to wrap up our discussion here. Have you guys read any of his other fiction?
I have not.
Neither have I.
Okay. Me neither.
We're all failures. No.
I mean, he is definitely very well known for Chronicles of Narnia. I'm going to be completely honest and say that I've never heard of anything else that he's ever written. That might be my own ignorance, which is like totally fine. I admit to that. But one of the series that I was reading about that I'm kind of interested in is called the Space Trilogy. And it's made up of 3.5 books, we'll say. And it's Out of the Silent Planet is the first one. The second one is called either Perelandra or Voyage to Venus. And the third one is called That Hideous Strength or The Tortured Planet. And it basically talks about, well, these were written before Narnia, first off, and the main character was partly based on Tolkien. And he also inspired C.S. Lewis to write these. And the first book in the series is about how Earth has been corrupted and exiled from the rest of the solar system, which that concept in and of itself just is very interesting to me.
Yeah. Holy cow. Like, that's definitely, wow, interesting. Kind of wrapping your brain around that and, like, how that came about and what other creatures may exist in the solar system that could, you know, exile Earth. Like, that all intrigues me.
Yeah, especially, like, when you think about it and how it predates, like, you know, even Star Trek, where, like, how could Earth work in, like, this intersolar community and how it's been, like, what it's taken over. And I would be interested to actually read that.
Right, yeah. And I mean, there still are a lot of Christian themes here, and angels and demons do exist. And it's very, like, I think I'm most interested in the actual concept and how he ends up pulling it off. I think that there's probably a reason why Narnia is more well known than this series, and maybe this one didn't have the same kind of acclaim, but doesn't necessarily mean it's, you know, better or worse. But there's also a fourth book, an unfinished manuscript called The Dark Tower, that was published after he had died. And some people, first of all, there was a claim about whether or not it was genuine. And then some people, you know, didn't necessarily receive it in the same way as the trilogy. And I just think, like, I'll be interested if any of our listeners have read this series and if they can tell us what they think about it in comparison to something like Chronicles of Narnia, because this kind of book, like the science fiction, is probably more my style than Narnia is, but I still enjoyed Narnia, so perhaps I can pick these up and get another look into C.S. Lewis's writing style and if I like it.
Yeah, I'd be interested to read more. I mean, I'm really on a space kick right now because I'm still reading Ursula Le Guin's space novels, so yeah, that'd be something I'd be interested in.
And Brittany, you said you've actually read some of his literary criticism.
Yeah, so in my lit theory class, there were we had an anthology of a bunch of different literary critics that we had to read, and C.S. Lewis was one of them. And also in a freshman seminar that I TA'd for, it was all about it was called Words, Words, Words. And so it was all about language construction and a little bit of linguistics. And he wrote a book on words, and like it, we read some excerpts from it, and it's all really interesting because it's not, you know, you're not looking for symbolism and, you know, the bigger scheme of a novel, but you're looking for how he views writing and how what he looks for when he's reading and how the construction of words and sentences all, you know, fit this certain pattern in his brain. And, you know, you read him against other people who write on the same topic. And it's just really, really interesting to get that inside look into how his mind works and what he thinks is important for the way things should sound and how, you know, you should construct things. And he's very, very in tune with language, which I thought was really interesting to learn about him. And another thing that I would probably reread, like pull out those old printouts that I had from college and, you know, reread that before rereading the series. So not just reading, you know, his works, thinking about all of the religious symbolism this time and thinking about, you know, what order I should read them in and figuring out which characters I like and don't like now, but actually paying attention to the language, because I think that'll be really interesting because he did put a lot of effort into that.
Yeah, and that's something that I would definitely be interested in as well. So thinking about what he's saying in terms of, or how he's saying it, I guess, more than what he's saying or on the same level as what he's saying, because I think it's very easy to read something like Chronicles of Narnia and take it at face value. It's a good, entertaining story, but at the same time, you do want to look a little bit deeper because you want to try to understand what he is saying to his readers and the message he is trying to convey, because that series very much has a message by the end of it. And that has a lot to do with language. So I think that's really interesting that he focused so much on language, because that is something that I also like to read about. And when I write, you know, that is something that you really do have to think about, the way that you say things.
Yeah. And they're all like kind of in a series of books. So I just looked them up to make sure I was remembering them right. And the one about language and words and like his sort of like his fascination on putting them together in the right order is called Studies in Words. And then he has another book called An Experiment in Criticism. He also has a bunch of stuff about image and imagination. And then he has a few that are mainly just on medieval itself, because he is a medievalist. So he wrote a lot about medieval literature, which is really interesting too. I haven't read any of that, but I would, if I ever give in to the academic side of my brain again, I would probably pick up something along those lines.
Very cool. Yeah, there are definitely other books and stories and essays and all this other stuff out there that we obviously didn't have time to discuss in an hour-long episode. He is a very interesting person with a lot of experience, I would say, because he didn't really start writing until quite a bit later in his life, and even the Chronicles of Narnia came out like quite a bit into his lifetime, and there's so much more about him that you can discover, and part of that is also his partial autobiography, Surprised by Joy, which details his conversion to Christianity or rediscovery of Christianity. And if that is the kind of thing that you're into, I'm sure that would be fascinating as well. If listeners have any recommendations for us in particular, I would be interested in checking those out too. But I also, as just a final thought kind of thing, did this discussion change your view on C.S. Lewis at all? And are you more or less interested in reading some of his other books, either the ones that we did discuss, like the Space Trilogy, or other ones that we didn't really have time to dive into?
I think just like going on kind of what I just touched on earlier, I would be more interested to read his academic stuff and then go into rereading actually the Chronicles of Narnia first before obviously exploring the space novels, which I am very interested in. But I think I would like to not just sit down and read these like I would have at the top of the episode, because at the start of the episode, I'm like, oh yeah, I'd like to sit down and reread the full Chronicles of Narnia. That'd be great. But now, within an hour, I want to actually like reread them a different way. I don't just want to sit there and read them. I want to read them in the light of understanding his language and the symbolism and everything that's buried in it, and actually take a more not leisurely approach to it, actually read them and take time with them.
Yeah, I can't say, like, I've always found him a very interesting and just basically intriguing figure. I don't know a lot about him. I did learn quite a bit about him in the fourth grade, but who remembers half of what you talked about in the fourth grade? So it's one of those things where I feel like I should know more about him. I want to know more about him. I'm hoping to finish the Chronicles of Narnia here, and then by the time I'm done with them, maybe that will like instill more interest in me, because he does have a lot of stuff out there, and I've heard good things about books of his that I didn't know existed. I honestly didn't know that the Space Trilogy existed until this podcast, and it definitely sounds really cool and really fun, and now I kind of want to check that out too. So yeah, I wouldn't say it's changed, but I'm definitely more intrigued,
and I'm definitely calling him Staples Lewis from now on.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think I'm kind of in between you guys, where I'm definitely interested in learning more about him. I'm really interested in reading the Space Trilogy just because it sounds so different and interesting, the way that he's combining the idea of like angels and demons, but also with a sci-fi twist to it. And I think just the very concept of Earth being so corrupted that the rest of the planets, the people on the planets, sort of like, you know, kick it out of the club. Like, that is, how do you get to that point? How bad do you have to be? So yeah, definitely interested in finding out and reading more of the things that are lesser known, and also just trying to get more of a snapshot of what kind of person he was, because I think I can really see some people absolutely loving him and what he's had to bring to the table, but at the same time, other people who weren't necessarily on board with everything that he decided to write about. And there was just one quick thing that I remember reading, which was that Philip Pullman, who wrote the His Dark Materials series, apparently was, and again, I'm quoting this from Wikipedia, so fierce a critic of Lewis's work as to be dubbed the anti-Lewis. So clearly what C.S. Lewis had to say didn't sit well with everybody, and I think that is just as fascinating as what messages he did intend to bring to the table. But that basically wraps up our discussion on C.S. Lewis. I hope you guys enjoyed that. We will be back with another author spotlight next month once we decide who we want to talk about. But if you have any suggestions, again, hit us up on Twitter at BookHype. And next week, we will be coming back with our book club book, which is The Dead House by Don Kurtagich. And hopefully everybody enjoys that. I haven't started it yet, but I'm very interested to dive deeply into it. And then we're actually going to have a week off because of Thanksgiving. Some of us are traveling and just plain busy during that time. And then we will be back for December. And next week, we'll try to bring you our December schedule so you guys kind of know what's up there. So until then, I'm Karen.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm Kristen.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.